Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Mama's Casserole, the podcast where business meets a little bit of everything. I'm your host, Zach Romero, serving up a hearty mix of insights, stories, and surprises. From strategies to grow your hustle, to the latest tech trends, current events, and even a dash of conspiracy theories, there's always something bubbling in the oven. So grab a plate, pull up a chair, and dig into Mama's Casserole. Let's dish it out together. So welcome back to Mama's Casserole, where we dive deep into business, mindset, and the strategies that fuel success. Today, I have an incredible guest who embodies the spirit of entrepreneurship and financial freedom. Joining me is Matthew Munson, proud father, serial entrepreneur, mentor, and real estate investor who has built an impressive portfolio in both business and real estate. He owns a $1 million fence business in Illinois, has 4 rental properties in Texas, and has helped countless people land their first real estate deal. With over 4 years in real estate, Matthew knows what it takes to create cash flow, scale businesses, and develop the right mindset for long-term success. Beyond business, he's passionate about making memories with his kids, setting ambitious goals, and sharing insights that can help others level up in their own journeys. Whether it's real estate investing, entrepreneurship, or mindset strategies, Matthew brings a wealth of knowledge to the table. Get ready for an inspiring conversation packed with value. So let's dive in. Matthew, welcome to my show.
Oh, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it. And amazing introduction, man.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's like I said, I've known you for a little while and I've seen what you do online and what you offer out to people when it comes to cash flow and mindset. And I appreciate that. And I think it's great because so many people out there are always trying to sell their program or sell this or sell that. And from what I've seen from you, it's just like, hey, this is what it is. Here's a mindset. You know, there doesn't seem like there's one set procedure or plan for everybody. It's you got to tailor it to everybody's situation. So I appreciate what you guys do. And I know you have another lady that's really involved in that group on Facebook, and she seems to put out a lot of content as well. So, yeah, so that's kind of where the introduction came from, is what little bit I know of you and seeing what we do. I thought of you first as a guest because cash flow and business and entrepreneurship is a huge topic for people in general. And people have a lot of questions. How do I get started? How do I get into getting cash flow? How do I get recurring income? And real estate tends to be a topic that a lot of people go towards. So I have a friend who bought a house and flipped it and learned some hard knocks. I mean, he didn't come out in the red, but didn't come out quite how we wanted it. But it's an adventure for everybody, especially their first time around and whatnot. So I guess talking about that, you know, what got you into real estate? What was that moment that said, hey, this is what I want to go towards?
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest, what got me into real estate is that, you know, I always came from a background of poverty and you know, just being broke and stuff like that. And so I started to study rich people. And what I started to realize is that every single rich person or wealthy person that I would learn about, they all had one common trait. And that was that they all owned real estate. And the richer people owned larger real estate portfolios. So right. I said, there's got to be something to this. There's got to be a reason why everybody has it. There wasn't like one person that I studied that didn't have some form of real estate that wasn't just a, you know, their primary residence. So I was like, this got to be something. And then I was working a job. I was driving a truck, a semi-truck, 10 hours a day. And, you know, just driving down the road, I played out all my playlists and listened to all my favorite songs, you know, until they are almost, you know, my least favorite. And I said, man, it's got to be something else that I could do, is kind of time hack the time that I'm in here for this 50 hours a week. And so I found a podcast called Bigger Pockets. And it's a real estate podcast. It was in its, you know, in its first couple of years when I first discovered it. So I was able to start from the beginning and I just started watching and I was just blown away because I seen people that were in less fortunate situations than me. I got to hear their stories and how they got into it and seeing how many different ways there was to get into it. You know, I had the assumption that you had to be super rich to own a property and be a landlord. So it really gave me that proof of concept, like, man, you know, like anybody can do this. And so, yeah, I got hooked and got the real estate bug and never looked back since.
Yeah. So how did you find the podcast? Was it just one you just ran across, or were you specifically searching for real estate podcasts?
So I was honestly on YouTube looking up like how to buy a real estate property. And I kept seeing like bigger pockets as like episodes come up, because they have like these stories and it has like a little, you know, cool little hook on it. And so I was like, hey, I'll check this out. And then I liked what they were saying, so I checked out a couple more. And then as I seen that it wasn't like the same cookie cutter kind of thing, it was different situations. They were giving out your favorite books and all this stuff. So they kept giving out all this free information. And I was like, holy moly, like, I thought people would be charging for this. Right. So I was excited to find something that I could afford and that could give me all that value and that expertise through there. So, yeah, I just dove in and, you know, and then from watching those and listening to those, I was able to, like, you know, venture off and some of the people that they had as guests, like I could follow their accounts and now I can learn right. from them and reach out to them. So it was pretty much just like a snowball effect to really right. build my network.
I guess that's a kind of a big question too, is a lot of people listen to that stuff, but taking that step, you know, and so how did you fund your first investment? Was it, did the real estate come first or a business, like being an entrepreneur, which one came first?
The business came first. So honestly, I had like analysis paralysis. So for the first 2 years, I literally took zero action. Right. Like I was just learning and learning and learning. I was gobbling up every single amounts of information I could, because I thought, hey, I need to know everything about this in case anything goes wrong. I need to be the expert. And, you know, so I just sat on the sidelines, man, and I really missed the big boom around that COVID time where the house values were going through the roof. Yeah. And I missed that. And I was like, you know, I vowed to myself, like, hey, I'm either going to, you know, for lack of better terms, I'm either going to, you know, crap or get off the pot. You know, it's like, I've learned enough to get started. I just got to get started. I'm never going to get a deal if I never make a call or, you know, reach out or talk to a seller. So I just said, you know what, the heck of it, what's the worst that can happen? And, you know, I just started.
Right. Yeah. And that's like I said, that's mindset and taking action, you know, whether it's business or even investing in real estate. Is the excuse is always, oh, you got to have money to make money, right? And so, but there, somebody starts somewhere. You know, if your business is starting, you know, out of a wheelbarrow, not many businesses start with an F-350 that's wrapped and, you know, can carry a bunch of materials, right? So same with properties. You're not going to start with a 80 unit apartment complex. So
right.
You know, so how many businesses do you run at this moment?
At this moment, I have four businesses.
Okay. Four businesses. So how do you balance that time? Like, how do you manage your time trying to balance four businesses, property, family?
Yeah, honestly, well, number one is my family. So my boys get, you know, extreme priority, because that's the whole reason I got into entrepreneurship anyway, was to create that freedom. So I never had to miss a game or a practice or an event or a concert or whatever it was that they were in. I wanted to be that father that I never had. And so that's number one. And everything after that, I just time block it on my calendar. So each business gets a set amount of time. And that's in accordance to how much revenue it's generating. So the ones that I'm making a little bit less money, they get a little bit less priority. And the big money makers get a little bit more. But, you know, to honestly answer the question, there really is no balance. It's, you know, one day, one business will get a little bit more attention. The next day, another business may get a little bit more attention just based off of what fires I got to put out that day and, right. you know, the needs of the business. So it's hard to say there's a, you know, a good balance to it all. You know, there's a certain level of sacrifice, especially if you want to, you know, like if you got the goals that I do. You do have to sacrifice, but the only thing that I'm not willing to sacrifice is the time with my boys. So, when it's school hours and stuff.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings. Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
like that, I got to get all my work done, because once they're off of school, it's time to pour into them and absolutely be there for them and help guide them. So
absolutely, yeah, that's always a challenge for anybody, even if you're not running businesses. And in real estate, life seems to be busier all the time. Growing up, it didn't seem like people were that busy, and balancing work and family is always a challenge. But you keep those priorities in line and things tend to work out. You know, kids are resilient, but at the same time, they know and understand when you're trying your best or when you're making sacrifices. But at the same, you know, but at the same time, they're kids. It goes fast.
Yeah. And that was always one thing that stood true to me, is that I can always make up the money that I'm missing if I were to have to miss it for an event or something, but
right,
I can't make up the time, you know, and that's our most precious asset that we have. So, that's, you know, and, you know, to even better answer your question, the best way to buy back some of that time is delegation.
Right.
You know, you got to be able to build the systems and not just be somebody that's self-employed, because there's so many business owners out there that, you know, claim they own a business, but they're working every single day in it. Well, at that point, you just have a high paying job, because a business owner actually owns a system. So like, if you can't walk away for 2 to 3 weeks or a month without your business just kind of falling apart, then you're not a business owner. You're just self-employed, you know? Right. So once I started to understand that and understand, you know, that mindset, I just started to say like, hey, I need to hire people that are smarter than me, that are better than me at the things that I don't want to do, so that I could focus on what I'm really good at and the way that I best serve my businesses, and then hire everything else out. You know, I'd rather have a small piece of a big pie than, you know, the whole thing of, you know, nothing or.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Math always comes true, right? 0% of something big is still 0%. You know,
exactly.
So, you know, what is it when you're looking at a business to get into or a property, whatever it may be? What is it that you're looking for that says, "Hey, this is for me"? You know, is it just solely numbers, or you got some value? You know, values in your life that have to be attached to that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when it comes to businesses, the thing that I look for, the real estate is always a numbers game, right? And how can I help? You know, how, and that's how I really kind of operate in my life, is I'm always looking for a place where it's people over profit. So I'm always looking at, hey, how can I help this person? How can I best serve this person? Of course, I want to make some money. It's a business, but I'm all about creating win-win situations for everybody involved. Because as you know, in the business, it's a very, very small community, right? And so reputation is everything, and word travels fast. So if you're a shady guy, or if you're getting over on people, hey, you may make a couple extra bucks here and there, but it's not going to be sustainable, and it's going to be a lot harder to scale. As far as the businesses, what I'm looking for is, again, where can I add value here? Are they leveraging social media? Are they tracking all their KPIs? You know, is the owner really marketing the business? Or, you know, like, just looking for those little problems that exist in the business and then saying, hey, you know, I can really help you with this. So that's really what I'm looking for in a business. And I want to always get businesses that are vertically integrating from the business I currently have. I don't want to go start a bunch of companies that have nothing to do with what I'm doing. I want to focus on my big money maker, like my fence business. And then I just offer additional services and really go hard on that, because we already built the brand. We already did all the hard work. You know, so I'm more about, you know, I would prefer to buy a business than to build it from scratch, just in that regard. So stick with what works, focus on that, and just slowly start, you know, creating bolt-on businesses
absolutely
that align with that one.
Absolutely. And I know we met through the fencing world, and your business is a customer of mine, and that's how we introduced. And so I know you do have a business partner in the fence business, and he was a friend beforehand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, we were just talking about that today. It's funny. We grew up, our kids, you know, we didn't really hang out like when we were kids or anything like that. There's a little bit of an age gap there. But as we got older into adulthood, we had kids that are right around the same age. And, you know, I got my sons into travel sports and I said, hey, man, you know, your son's a big kid. I think you should come out for football, you know, and he's like, all right, cool. You know, I'll try it. You know, unbeknownst to us, his kid has actually turned out to be a huge stud. The kid's now, he's like 6'4", 200 pounds, just a freak athlete.
And he's still a freshman, isn't he?
He's only a freshman
in high school.
Already got an offer for college and everything, so it's incredible.
Yeah, you could almost do a whole episode on that.
But yeah, we were at all the same events, at all the practices. We, you know, he's just as a dedicated father as I am, so we were pretty much spending 5 days a week at practice, and then one day at least, on the weekends with the kids' sports. So we were constantly talking, and he was telling me about his business. And at that time, I was still trucking, so you know, I was just kind of being there to, you know, to listen, and you know, as we were watching the games and practices and stuff. So, but one common thing I kept hearing was like, there's a problem. Like he couldn't get back to people, or he's losing estimate forms, and he needed a truck. And I just kept hearing these problems. But you know, my mindset wasn't there. I had a limited mindset, so I wasn't even picking up on these cues that the universe was trying to tell me, like, hey, this guy needs help. But I wasn't looking to help him, you know, even though I was his friend. You know, I wasn't even thinking like, hey, I don't know anything about fences, so I didn't even think to even offer any kind of help or assistance to him, you know. And we ended up actually starting a little poster business, because we seen that there was a need. And we're like, we're always at these sports events, we're always here, we have a good relationship with all the parents and coaches. Like, hey, let's start this poster company. We can make these posters right on site for these kids. And man, it went horribly wrong. Like our first and only job that we pretty much booked, we got booked at the like the Super Bowl for the kids. So it kind of took a lot of the time away from like us going out and enjoy the game. And everything was happening. I mean, the power was going out. We kept blowing fuses. The printer stopped working. It was really cold. The canopy that we had kept blowing over. I mean, it was anything that could have went wrong really went wrong. And after that, I just wiped my hands. Like, I just want to take a total loss. Like, this is not what I'm in it for. And the profit margins weren't, you know, they weren't great. So just like the opportunity cost there wasn't, it didn't make sense for me to continue
a hobby.
Yeah.
So I guess in that case, if that's how you guys started business together, did that give you a hesitation of going into business with him in the fence world? Or did you understand why and what the differences were?
Okay. Yeah. Honestly, it didn't give me any apprehension. I honestly was more reluctant based off of my lack of skill set. But, you know, a friend of ours, a guy that actually ran the football program, we had a failed flip that we were supposed to do, and it didn't end up working out. And he's the one that convinced me to say, hey, you know, like, give Marty a call. You know how to talk. You know how to sell. You know, he's looking for something like that. Possibly you could even, you know, help him out by getting a truck with the money that I was going to use on the flip. And he's like, maybe he'll, you know, partner up with you. And I was like, no way. There's no way. Why would he do that? I know nothing about fences. Like, I literally nothing. I knew there was wood and chain link, and that was about as far as my knowledge went.
Right.
And he did decks, too. So I was like, dude, this is not my world here. And I'm like, he's not going to give me anything. And he's like, just call him. And I was like, all right. And who knows if I would have called him or not, but the guy made me call him right there. He's like, no, call him right now. Put it on speaker. I was like, all right. So I get on there, start talking to him. Like, hey, you know, I'd be willing to help you buy a truck, and, you know, I can take the calls for you and do the estimates. And then he's like, heck yeah, let's do it. And I was like, what? Like, I was like surprised. I was like, no way. I'm like, there's no way it was that easy, you know? And he's like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And honestly, and then he said, yeah, man, I'll give you 50%. And I was like, what? You're like, you're going to give me 50% of the business for this investment? And the business was still pretty much in its infancy stage. I think it's only been open like maybe a year at that point. So like his top line revenue was about 50K before I came aboard. So luckily I was able to get in early and at a good percentage. And I mean, it's just taken off since then. So.
Well, you know, and the thing is a lot of people would be like, oh, why do you give 50% away? But it kind of goes back to what we said a minute ago. You know, what's your percentage of the pie? Now, what is the size of the pie now versus what it was when you came in? And he could have tried to pay somebody as an employee to go out and sell. But now he's got a commitment to an income that isn't guaranteed.
Right.
You know, where you've got an ownership. You've also got some risk now. You're going to go out and make it happen. And but at the same time, that's it's a mindset again. Somebody he had to take action and make a decision. You know, just like you had to take action on other aspects we talked about. He it was that was his call at that point.
Yeah. And it was like a perfect partnership because all the skills that he lacked, I had.
Right.
And that's really why we mesh so well is because everything that he's great at, I suck at.
Yeah.
Everything that he sucks at, I'm great at. So it's like, this is like a perfect marriage, you know?
Right. That works, man. That's awesome. You know, and you know, because I've talked to a lot of people in the past or even my own family and kids will be like, hey, let's do this or hey, let's do that. And I always have a hesitation of going into business with family or friends because disagreements are going to eventually come and it's inevitable. Money's the number one thing people argue about, you know, in a marriage and a relationship and, you know, in a business relationship is no different. So there's always a hesitation, you know, but sometimes things just make sense and you have to take a risk. So that's that taking action. And really that's that topic is a lot of what I like to talk about in my podcast and going forward is mindset. You talked about coming from a poor background, you know, I wouldn't say I came from a poor background, but it sure wasn't wealthy at all. You know, I don't remember ever not having food, but I know we didn't really have much. It was kind of like, hey, Dad, I want these shoes for basketball. Okay, well, here's the $30 I could afford. You want anything more, you pay the difference, right? So,
right,
you know, I did come from that as well, but that limited me in my ability to take action. You know, the most stable person in my life was my grandfather, who retired Navy. He retired post office, loyal. He drilled that into me. And many times I've stayed in a job or stayed in a place that probably shouldn't have stayed so long and kept me from making that jump. But at the same time, I knew in the back of my mind, I can do more. I have the abilities and I have the talents to do more. But it was getting past that hurdle in my own mind of confidence. What are people going to think? But, you know, I got to a point where, like, I need to know for myself, I at least try.
Right.
And so, what is, you know, and I've been reading the book. I just finished it, J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy. And it's all about mindset. Coming, what do you come out of? What is your bloodline? Blood does run thick. You know, genes do run thick. There is no doubt. My biological father, I didn't really grow up around much as a child. Man, I've got so many interests that he has. Like, we're reconnected now. Personality, so many things are so similar that it's scary, even though I didn't really grow up around him much.
Right.
And so that tells me right there, things are ingrained in us to a point. And, but that book really was very similar and kind of resonated with me because they came from the hills of West Virginia, the mining communities, you know, to the point where within two generations, JD went to an Ivy League school, you know, and it wasn't because they could afford it. He got a scholarship. He worked for it. He went through it. And so that's that mindset, you know. And was there a defining moment for you that made you take that step finally when after listening to the podcast, or was it just a matter, it was a culmination and you finally just kind of found the right situation? Or was there just this moment, somebody said something or you read something that just like, I got to do this no matter what. I got to do it for myself.
Absolutely. Honestly, I still remember the quote to this day and the feeling that I got from it. And I heard this quote and it said, it's not your fault if you're born poor, but it is your fault if you die poor. And when I heard that, I got goosebumps and my hair stood up and I was like, wow, like that is so true. Like, you know, nobody's coming to save me. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I had a sad story. Who gives a darn? Like, nobody's coming to rescue me. Like, I'm a man. I got to get this. I got kids now. I got dependents. It's like, you know, winging it and freestyling it hasn't gotten me anywhere. It's time to take a chance on myself. And I got into it just like, you know, my partner, he never obviously, you know, trained anybody because it was just him. He was running the show. So literally I had like 2 days of him walking with me on the estimates and then I was throwing the wolves. I didn't know how to bid the thing. I didn't know what the different styles were. I didn't know what to tell these people. I was pretty much a glorified order taker at that point. And then I would just call him in the middle of the estimate like, hey, can we do this? Hey, can we do this? You know, like, how do I do this? You know, like, is this even possible? You know, and obviously there's been many mistakes where I overpromised, and you know, he's a miracle worker, man. Shout out to my boy Marty, man. He's incredible, man. The guy has been doing this so long. His expertise level is just through the roof. And yeah, man, somehow he ends up keeping all my promises that I honestly don't even know if they're possible. And man, he finds a way, you know. So
I've even seen him get behind the camera a little bit on some of your guys' social media posts. Yeah, he's getting out of his box.
Yep. And that's the thing. That's what I love about him, is that he's not afraid. Like, he understands his role and like where he's really good at. And he allows me the freedom to, you know, use my expertise and and leverage all the information that I've gained over the years and through reading and podcasting and networking events and hiring mentors. And he really trusts me, you know, and that's what I think is very important, especially when you're picking a partner. It's like, I always, you know, use the analogy. It's a marriage, right? In a marriage, you get together, there's a little bit of a dating phase, and then we sign this document and now we're locked in. And hey, you know, God forbid something happens, you know, he might get half my stuff, you know?
Right.
So it's the same thing. And I always tell people, hey, date the person that, you know, don't just jump into business with them just because it seems like a good opportunity, because, you know, everything's going to be good in the beginning, just like a marriage or just like a relationship. You got that honeymoon stage. But hey, can I struggle with this guy or gal? You know, could we go through some hard times? Is money going to break us up? You know, but we made some commitments to each other and some upfront expectations that we came up with before we got in. We weren't going to watch each other's pockets. It was just, hey, we're going to do I'm going to do 50% of what it takes to grow this business. And so is he. And sometimes he picks up some of my slack if I'm a little extra busy, and vice versa. You know, obviously I can't build, but I can help, you know, alleviate some of the other responsibilities that he may have at the time. Or if he needs to step away to go to his own son's functions and stuff like that. Just so we play really well. We don't get too finicky over like, oh, well, nope, that's your role. You know, I'm not doing right. It. It's just whatever's best for the company, whatever's going to make our customer get a, you know, just the most unbelievable, you know, not even comparable experience, then that's our goal. Like, we want to, it's more about, you know, building fences. It's about really creating a good experience and really bringing some more respect to the trades, because I feel like so many people these days, they get in, they do shoddy work. They're just trying to get the bids, and they're not doing stuff right. And it's just like, man, you know, I don't care about losing bids. I care about people not getting a good service, you know? So I feel like it's almost as a disadvantage if someone hires someone else besides us. And I'm not trying to be cocky, but I know to the lengths that I will go to make this a good experience. When we first started, Marty built a deck, and there was something we didn't know about the composite, and ended up warping on a portion of the deck. We literally went there and rebuilt the entire deck. We lost $6,000. We didn't try to go cheap and say, all right, hey, we'll only fix a board here. We literally tore everything down, rebuilt the entire deck the right way. You know, and the lady was elated. She was like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys did this and didn't charge me anything. Hey, it was our mess up. Hey, right. human error exists. And but it's our job to stand behind our work and keep those promises that we made. So that's what's really important to us. And that's why we have the most reviews in our area, have the best reputation. I mean, we've been able to do $3 million in revenue for the last 3 years consecutively, just off word of mouth. No promotion, no radio ads, no Google ads, nothing. It's just literally off word of mouth and Google reviews. So, you know, it's just a testament of how much we care and how much we really want to, you know, just deliver that knockout performance for them.
Yeah. So, and that's a huge discussion in our industry right now. I don't know if there was a post, I think it might've been even this morning, on one of our Facebook groups, and talking about how the industry tends to tear people down or criticize. And there's a lot of times two camps too, about who's competition or can you help competition? You know, I'm the type, I don't look at other people who try to do what I do as competition, because I might not be the best fit. And if I push something to somebody else, you know what? They're going to remember that and push it back to me. And that's kind of like what you were saying earlier, is I want a good customer experience, because I won't lose sleep over a job I lost because there's no headache, but I will lose sleep over a job that I know I got to go, how am I going to deal with this person tomorrow? How am I going to make them happy? What is it going to take? You know? And so I know I'm not the answer for everybody in our business, but I probably know a lot of people that I could push them to help them out.
Right.
And that is a mindset in our industry specifically, Because, I mean, you hear about people like, oh, I'm going to be an electrician when I grow up. I'm going to be a plumber. You don't hear a lot about fencing.
No.
And our niche is, I feel like, is very behind in that fashion. And there's a lot, there are a few guys out there trying to change that. But it's got to be a mindset of everybody. This has to be professional. We have to take care of people. And that just goes hand in hand. And, man, I like the fact that you guys would rebuild that deck. You know, I had an instance that I had sold a fence direct to a homeowner in the middle of Tennessee somewhere. And contractor shows up, sets the posts. And when he goes to actually assemble the fence, he's like, this isn't going together right. The fence ain't assembling. And rather than just stop, call me, maybe what's going on, he literally took all the posts back out of the ground. But he left the concrete in the ground. So he slid it out of the wet concrete and said, he said, all my posts were cut incorrect. My posts weren't cut incorrect. All you had to do was cut the pick. It was a picket top privacy. All you had to do is cut the pickets a little bit, and then the top rail will fall in and go into the hole. It's all it needed. Right? So he did that. But instead of saying, or besides maybe not being able to see the error, I saw it from a picture and knew what was wrong.
Right.
I said, this is all he had to do. I would have paid the guy to fix it was our mistake. It was either picket length or a hole spacing. But it was so fixable and so, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours worth of work. We would have paid him. It was our fault.
Right.
No, his response was to pull the posts out of the ground and leave the homeowner with concrete in these holes around his brand new house, around his pool. What length did we go to? I flew out there and rebuilt the fence myself.
Wow.
In a heat wave. And this big boy don't do good in the heat waves anymore, especially, you know, building a fence is not easy work. So, you know, that's the kind of things that people have to be willing to do. And that's a mindset, especially in this day and age with Google reviews and Yelp and whatever else you want to throw out there. It can be rough at times. So, yeah.
And the mindset is huge, man. And one thing that really helped me in my business is that always blaming myself. Any problems that happen in the business, I just look inward. Man, you know, so, you know, if something goes wrong, and how I like to do it is in building our company culture is that it's an open door, right? It's a safe space always. We don't yell at our guys. We don't punish them like severely or anything like that. It's like, if something happens, we address the problem. We don't even need to call people out, right? Because we're all on the same crew. We know who did what. But the thing is, I just look inward. Okay, you know what? It's my fault. There must have been some error in communication with my training. I didn't train you well enough. So then we just have a meeting and we say, okay, what was the problem? How did it happen? And how will it never happen again? And then once everybody can agree on that, can articulate to me, hey, yep, this is why it happened. This is, you know, the preventative measures that we'll, you know, take moving forward. Now there's never going to be a problem again, right? And if there is, now it's negligence. And then that's when we'll step in with some disciplinary action. Because once you know 100% exactly how to do it, if you're not doing it, you're either rushing or you just don't care, right? And those two things are not, you know, that those are not permitted here at the company, because when you rush, two things start to become compromised, and that's safety on the job site and quality. So absolutely. I always tell my guys, you work efficiently, but don't ever rush, right? We're not rushing these projects. It doesn't matter how fast we get them done. We bid it to take enough time to do it right. And, you know, so that's the mindset I have and constantly improving. And the way that we do that and not really getting on the guys too much, you know, and looking inward to make those different policies, it creates a safe space. You know, there's so many people out here that, you know, some of the owners, you know, they're screaming at their guys or cussing them out or firing them or, you know, docking their pay or whatever the problem may be in the disciplinary action. But now it prevents lying, people not telling you things. And it just, you know, cuts off that line of communication. You want these guys to understand that, hey, we understand things happen, you know, but we just can't have it happening on a regular, you know. So the first time, it's on us. The second time, we taught you. So now this is a problem. So, and luckily, we got a great group of guys and a great team that is committed to the same quality that we have. They believe in the core values. They want to see us grow. They want to see us do well. And they really care about doing a great job. So when you can build that kind of company culture, you know, and really hire the right guys, I mean, this stuff is easy, man. It's easy money.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, turnover is the thing you hear about all the time, is a big complaint with business owners. But when you can build that culture, you know, our shortest term person really is just our two part-time office people. Wow. But in my shop, you know, two of the guys within a month of each other, and we're going on like 5 or 6 years with them.
Awesome.
And another guy is like 2.5 years. So we don't really have turnover either. And I take those situations with mistakes and say, hey, here's an opportunity to learn. And if it's on me, it's on me. And communication, you know, I'm at the top, so I start at the top. And I evaluate, you know, what could I have been more clear about? What could I have given a better expectation for? And like, yep. I mean, your guys' approach is our approach. That's the same way we do nice. It, you know, and it works. It
shows because of your retention. And I think it
absolutely,
you know, when you're talking to people and you're out there selling jobs and helping people, it's like, hey, the crew that you've been seeing on Facebook for the last few years is the same guys that are going to show up. So right. Not only is that promoting your brand, but it's showing, hey, man, these guys are around. They must be doing something right. And we've even, our crew lead, I mean, this guy has been offered positions, higher paying jobs, better benefits, right? And he didn't leave. Because of the culture that we created,
right?
And now we are able to reward them with a bunch of bonuses. Like one thing that we do for our guys is, hey, there's going to be times that we can't just pay you more money or just keep giving you raises, right? So what we do is all the little jobs, being that I know their quality of work, I just say, hey, I got a guy that can do it on the side for cheaper. Yep. So if the financial part of it is the real big objection, I can handle that.
Yeah.
You know, but I just want to make sure that that customer is getting a great quality service. So whether I'm making money on it or my guys is, that's another way that I can give them that extra money. Hey, now you can really make some good coin. You go out there and do 50% of the labor. You have no overhead. You just sacrifice your weekend. And hey, that pays for your family vacation or whatever you want to do. So presenting those opportunities for those guys and not saying, all right, well, hey, like, you know, break me off a piece. Like, no, it's all you, 100% you. You can use our equipment. The only thing I ask is if you break it down, obviously you're going to have to pay for that. But
right.
You know, take care of the equipment and go out there and get your money, man. Like, we want our guys to win, you know. And
yeah,
we always...
for sure. You know, we don't run crews. We're not installers. We're manufacturers. And so what we've done is we've actually, the last couple of years, we do a quarterly profit sharing. And nice. So, you know, we get, it's, you know, the percentage seems low, but when you're talking about, we go off of the whole business. And so this also helps motivate them to not make the errors. Because if that one specific job or any of the jobs start building up errors and I got to reship something, it comes right off the top, right? So it'll keeps them on top of their toes of quality, doing a great job, not rushing through it. Like, oh, if I push all these out by the end of the month, it's the end of the quarter, we're going to get this big profit sharing. Well, not if it comes back. You know, okay, that quarter, let's say the date specific, that quarter might look good. But all those expenses roll into the next quarter, guess what? The next quarter is not going to be so hot. Or nothing, right? So, you know, we explain that to them. We don't just say, oh, here's what it is, and it's just this, you know, number up in the air. You know, I stop and tell them, hey, look, these mistakes can affect this, and here's how. Here's what it does. You know, because I get a commissions or percentage. It's the same thing, right?
Right.
So I explain to them how it affects me. It affects them now, too. And so that has been a plus for us. And in those things. So,
and that's another good thing about it is that when you build that kind of culture, it attracts the right kind of employees,
right?
And team members, you know, like they believe in a vision, they want to see it, they believe in something bigger than, but if you're just freestyling, if you're just kind of going off the cuff there, you know, they don't see a lot of stability in that, right? So it's hard to really commit fully. They may be great workers, but you lose a lot of good guys if you don't have an efficient system and the operations aren't down, you know, and if you aren't talking about the goals of the company, and we even, you know, tell them about the finances, we don't break it all down, but, you know, we give them, hey, you know, profits are up this one. We've, you know, we're able to maximize because we were able to get a couple of jobs done early, and we share that with them. And then we give them bonuses, you know, and give them a bunch of opportunities to earn extra money and earn different projects and stuff. We're always looking out for our guys. We take them on vacation. We have, you know, company bonding events that we do. So, really just taking care of your team. That's the number one thing too is, and one of my mentors told me that, he says, you need to treat your team better than the client. Like so many people are out there just trying to make the clients just, hey, this is amazing experience. This is, you know, top notch. And then they treat their team like crap.
Right.
Well, hey, those are the guys that are actually going to be producing that promise. That's the people that are going to be producing that experience. So they should be very happy, because the happier they are, the better they're going to do out there, right? And the better the energy is going to be. Like, we have so many compliments. Like, your crew is so positive. They were laughing. Right. We even got some clients, you know, our guys were carrying some materials and they were joking and they were dancing as they were carrying it. And the video like went viral.
I think I saw that. Yeah, I did see that.
And it was just like, you know, they're having fun, you know, and my thing was always invest back into the business to where it makes the job easier, right? Because when I was working a W-2 job, I was like, man, I used to always think of an excuse, like get out of bed, my back's hurting, my feet are hurting. I was like, dang, how can I call in sick? Or thinking of a way to do it. So I was like, man, I never want to create that experience. Let's let the machinery that can be replaced and that is replaceable and repairable, let the machines take all the beating.
Right.
Let's make it so easy for the guys that they, you know, they're excited to wake up and get after it in the morning. And luckily that's the team that we got. And so I'm super blessed with them. Couldn't do this without them. And super proud of all the growth that they've had.
Well, they spend more time with the customer than you do.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
They're the ones at the home all day long. You show up, sell the job, come back maybe later, whatever it is. But they're the ones in front of the customer. They are your representatives while they're there. And people see that, you know.
One thing that's huge for us too is being that we know that there was going to be that big gap in the relationship, because, you know, you go out there, you sell the job, everything's good. They got that nice, good feeling going through them and everything's exciting. And then they wait a month or whatever, a month and a half to get the job done. They haven't seen anybody. So now there's a little gap in experience in their experience. And then the guys come, they don't know who they are. So that's why we're really good about getting them on camera. And also we do what's called a transfer of trust. So the night before we go out to the job site and the crew's going to go out there, I have my crew lead give them a call and he introduces himself. Hey, this is Ernesto. I'm going to be coming to your house. You can expect us around 8 a.m. or whatever the time is. So preps them for that. And then when he goes to the door and reintroduces himself, so they know him off the video, they got the call last night. So now it's not just a stranger with a bunch of group of guys with colored t-shirts jumping off a trailer, getting over here, like becoming to be able to be familiar with the crew that's arriving at their house. And I think it just makes such a better experience and that they could trust them, you know, because, you know, they're not seeing me again until the job is complete, you know. So I want to do that transfer of trust where, hey, you knew Matt. Okay, now you know Ernesto and Marty and JP and all these guys. And so we have them do that introduction and it's really helped us a lot. You know, we get so many compliments on our communication and our customer service.
Love it. Love it. I want to go back a little bit to some of the cash flow stuff. That's what I love about this podcast. We can go wherever it takes us. But some of this kind of goes hand in hand is a good balance, right? So we're talking about balancing our business and our time. But what's your approach to getting a good balance of cash flow streams? Like, do you have a formula that says, hey, I'm going to have this percentage of rentals, this percentage of businesses, just like somebody would within their stocks? Like, I've got so many long-term, I've got short-term. Do you have a formula, or do you just take it as it go and evaluate it, see what makes sense?
Yeah. So honestly, what I do is I buy the rentals strategically. Those are for more like depreciation and stuff like that, trying to lower the tax bill, trying to be creative with that. So, cause right now in the market, to be honest, there's not a lot of cash flowing rentals. You're not making a much out of my four rentals. I only make $378 total.
Yeah.
So, there's some that are really close to break even, but the mindset that I have in it is you got to treat real estate, you know, it's the real estate business, right? It's an actual business. So it's not just, hey, I have a rental. This is a side hobby. I got a couple $100 coming in every month. This is a business. So are there going to be business expenses? Are there going to be fires that come up? Yes, there is. You're going to have to pay, right? But the goal is, this is not a get rich quick scheme, but it is a get rich, you know, plan, right?
Plan.
You wait long enough, you're going to get rich and wealthy off of this. This is a great place to park wealth. So I'm always looking at that. My formula usually is flip two houses, buy a rental, flip two houses, buy a rental. So using that money to invest in something, because we're going to get the money on the back end. So for instance, we buy a house that's $200,000. It's going to be worth $320,000 in 10 years. Now we refi out, we get all tax-free money because, you know, loans aren't taxed. So now we're able to use that leverage. So we buy rentals and we never sell them, only sell flips. So That's the formula that I use. And I got some calculators that I made out of some Google spreadsheets that helped me analyze the deal very quickly. So I just try not to waste too much time, but I'm really looking for people that I can help. Like I help a lot of people in foreclosure, divorce, probate, situations like that, or, you know, behind on their payments or tax liens and stuff like that. People in bad situations, and I come and offer help, right? And I don't just come in and say, hey, take this low, crappy offer, right? That's not my style. I come in and say, hey, you know, let's just have a normal conversation. Like, what's going on, right? And really undercover their why. You know, like, why do you want to sell? Why are you in this situation? Like, how can I help? Not just, okay, you need to sell. Because a lot of people, it sounds odd enough, but there's a lot of people that don't need the money. They're just trying to get rid of the problem,
right?
And if you don't dig deep enough, you may just give them an offer and they're like, well, that's not going to help me. So, you know, we don't have a deal. My first deal, for instance, was a seller finance deal. An elderly lady, her husband had passed away. She was a stay-at-home mom her entire life. Never worked a job ever. She was just a really good mom and a really good wife. You know, the husband took care of everything. He even had a separate bank account for the rentals. Well, I came in, you know, was talking to the lady, and I was like, you know what? After talking to her, she already got the death benefit and all the money that she had already inherited, you know, upon his exit. And so I was like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that George did not, you know, leave these rentals to you so that you can be, you know, answering calls in the middle of the night and coming to fix a light bulb and stuff.
Become a landlord overnight. Yeah.
Right. You know, I'm sure that he left this to you so that you can get that mailbox money, that money that you didn't have to work for, that just came every month and was deposited in your account. And she's like, yeah, you know, really don't know how to do that stuff. And I said, well, hey, listen, I know you really don't need the money, but I have another way that I can buy this deal that would benefit you, right? I could pay over asking. I could pay more than you really want. And I can give you that mailbox money that he really wanted you to have and take away all the problems that would persist in that. You would never have to worry about answering anything. You don't have to pay any taxes. You don't have to worry about any maintenance, nothing. You're completely off the hook and you still get money every month. So I created a win-win for her, you know, and that's really what it's about, is understanding where you can be of service, you know. And if you lead from the heart and you're you know, leading with, you know, the intention to serve people, I think that deals and just that kind of energy, it just, you know, it comes back tenfold. So that's what I'm trying to do, is just put as much good and that good energy out there. And, you know, when it comes back, it's always worth it. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So am I correct in the fact that your properties are actually out of state?
Yep. Yeah. All my rentals are in Texas, right outside of Dallas, Fort Worth, in a town called Richardson.
Okay. Yeah. I want to say I might've just been there. But, yeah, I was in Dallas a few weeks ago. That's on the Fort Worth side. Is it on the west side of Texas or Dallas?
I'm not exactly 100% sure, like map wise.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how Texas? I mean, you're in Illinois, or am I right? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I'm in Illinois.
Texas. I mean, how did that happen? Just contact you knew and opportunities.
Well, I got an acquisitions company where I was marketing, because I was doing wholesaling before, and I had a team of 25 people that I was teaching real estate, teaching them how to get their, you know, teaching them how to get deals. So we were marketing there. We always market in the Sun Belt states because it's really good appreciation. It's places that people want to move to, right? A lot of people are moving from California and Florida and all these other states, and they're moving to Texas, right? So I seen, okay, hey, this is an ever-growing market. Dallas-Fort Worth is, you know, always been a great hot market. And I always try to go outside of the metro area because I know that the city life isn't always for everybody, but there's still a lot of jobs and opportunities. So, you know, I go out about 30 minutes outside of the inner city there so that they could still, it's close enough to still commute, but far enough away from the, you know, any kind of knuckleheads and stuff, and they can really just live a nice, quiet life. And so, yeah, I was just doing some marketing out there, and that's how I came across this lead. But yeah, primarily I want to invest in those red states, you know, and not to be political. It's just, you know, the blue states are not very landlord friendly. It's really hard to kick people out if they're not paying. It's a long process. You know, some people abuse the system and, you know, they'll just stay as long as they can, then they'll tear it up. And, you know, so I was just like, you know what? I don't want to deal with that. I want to move where, hey, if this person's not paying, you know, I understand stuff is coming up, but once you start to get in a default, now you're actually like messing me over. Like you're hurting me. And all I did was try to be a good person. Like I'm always hey, as soon as something's going on, my property manager is getting a contractor over there right away. Like, we're not waiting. We're not any kind of slumlords. We fix everything. We make everything nice, you know. So in return, I just need you to pay on time, right? Because then I can't offer that service. And that's why we're not the cheap guys in the fence industry, right? A lot of people are like, oh, man, you know, you're much more expensive than the other guys. Well, if you knew the level of service and commitment I'm going to give you for life, we have lifetime guarantee on everything that we do. If you knew the extent that I'm going to go to make sure that you have a great experience, you would gladly, you would say that's it, you know, because I guarantee 100% I will always make it right. I'm never, ever going to leave you out there. You're never going to say, oh man, Matt never called me back, or hey, they never fixed this. I don't care what it is. I don't care whose fault it is. We're fixing it, because that little fix goes a long way, you know, and we've, you know, with that being said, we did a cool guy that we did a job for. I got a call from this guy a couple years ago, right? And he's like, hey, this dumpster company, they were getting my trash cans and they backed into the fence. He had a vinyl fence. We didn't put it in. So a lot of times we don't repair anything that we didn't install.
Right.
But he's like, man, I can't. And I was like, man, if we didn't do it, you know, I don't know, you know. And he's like, yeah, man, nobody else is, you know, nobody else is calling me back and they're all saying the same thing. So, you know, I could have easily said, you know, like, yeah, well, sorry for your luck, bud. But I just realized, hey, this guy has a problem. Nobody else is willing to take this because it's such a small job. It's like a couple of pickets that were damaged, you know. And I said, you know what? This is what I'll do, man. I'll come out there and I'll take a look and see if we can help you. So I came out there against my better judgment, you know, but just because I knew that the guy had no other option. You know, if nobody else is answering, there's only a handful of fence companies out where I'm at. So if it wasn't me, he was, you know, kind of screwed, you know. Yeah. So I went out there and literally it was two pickets that were damaged. Two vinyl pickets, and I mean, you know the vinyl game. I mean, literally pop off the top rail, slide two more pickets in there, and I mean, it, you know, it's done. Right? So he's like, I was like, yeah, but we'll get it fixed for you. I'm like, but how about this? I'll fix it for you for free. Just leave us a Google review, right? So that super small task that was going to not cost us anything, right? We have plenty of, you know, extra spare pickets from split sections at the shop. For something, we're able to service this guy, really help him out, and we're not charging you. And then he was like, no, it's okay. Let's invoice the garbage. And this is what I said again, because I'm always thinking people over profits. And I said, you know what? Maybe that, you know, the garbage guy was having a bad day. Maybe he was distracted. Maybe he just got some bad news. You know, he bumped into it. I don't want to get this guy in trouble. I don't want to get this guy reprimanded for a couple pickets, because once we start invoicing, now the company's going to have to take action, because now you cost them money. So just understanding as a business owner how that may be handled, I was like, you know what? I don't want anybody to suffer from this. It's a very easy fix. Just leave us a Google review, and it's a win-win for both of us.
Absolutely.
After doing that, I ended up doing – he hired us for a gazebo, which was like a $20,000 job. Then his brother got an $18,000 fence. Then he called us back again because some storm damage took out the fence. We repaired – we completely redid the two sections of fence. And then another tree fell on and killed his pergolas that he had. So it was another $18,000. We almost made 80 to 90 grand off fixing two pickets.
Yeah.
And it was just, and then plus the extra reviews that we got from his brother and then from every single service, they're recommending us. It's just, you never know how far that can go. And, you know, as a business owner, it's not always about profit. You know, just the other day, we did a city, a fence for the city a couple years back. Their lawn mower, their maintenance crew backed into it and dented it, right? They gave us a call and said, hey, go ahead and fix it. Just send us the invoice. It was one section. We were out of there in 3 minutes. So the guy calls me and says, hey, we still haven't got the invoice. I say, hey, man, it's on the house. You know, it was a quick fix. We just wanted to keep it looking good for you. So don't even worry about it. Now, will there be any other jobs coming from that? Who knows? Right. But we don't need a charge for everything if it's really not going to cost us anything. Right. So especially if we got something spare sitting around the shop, hey, it's already been paid for by some client. You know, we just had access to make sure that we had enough. And so if we can help these people out, who knows? Could it lead to something else? Probably, but that's not why we're doing it, you know, and that's something that we've really done. And that's why we got such a great reputation, is we're not really trying to, you know, kill everybody with prices and doing this for the small jobs, you know, so.
Right. You know, and that's, that mindset goes into a lot of the reason why not everybody, but I believe I went into business for myself, obviously you guys, is there is a greater reward with the greater risk we take as business owners. Yes, we get to take home more of the pay or whatever you want to call it. But it's not just that for our families and whatever, but we live in a community that provides that. Everybody in that community is a potential customer or it's our neighbor, right? You go out and fix something or throw it back up in 5 minutes. I mean, that should be humanity in general, but it's not, unfortunately. But, you know, owning a business and when you're at a point where you're profitable, that's a benefit that we get to have to be able to help somebody. You know, exactly. we had a lady down, oh man, she was like South Seattle, a couple hours from us. And she bought a fence from us, hired a seven fence guy, some chuck in a truck, couldn't figure out how to put the fence together. No, you know what? I'll take that back. Let me take that back. She did hire a fence company who should have known what they were doing. But they kept, I think they subbed that out to some guys who really didn't know what they were doing. And was a mess. And this lady was a widow. You know, I had personally delivered it, so I'd seen the situation. She wasn't, you know, throwing a shade or whatever to get a sob story. And she finally found a handyman who has done a lot of work for her, who came in and was willing to fix it. And he did a good job. But we actually provided the whole job materials all over. It was just a small two sections and a gate to just block off an area. So it's not like it was a ton, but you know, talking with my business partner, we're like, I mean, come on, is this why we're in business or not? Is to be able to help somebody. She did pay for the materials the first time. She wasn't an issue. And unfortunately, a contractor left her hanging. So, you know, that's the beautiful thing about being in the position we're in, is to be able to do those types of things. And, you know, it's for our family. Yes, it's for us. It's for all of that. But it's for our community at large. It has to be, you know.
Yeah. And I obsess over it. I stress to all my guys and to myself, and I lead by that example. If I'm wearing anything with our branding on it whatsoever, I mean, I'm holding every single door open for everybody.
Right.
I'm being super extra polite. Like, I normally am a pretty positive and polite guy, but I'm going above and beyond because you just never know. You know, if they consistently, every single time they see map quality and they see a hoodie or a shirt, and that guy is always respectful and kind and not, you know, like cursing all the time or smelling like cigarette smoke. It's just like, wow, even if I don't need a fence, you know, they may be able to take that back and say, hey, you know what? I don't, you know, and talking to their sister or whatever and say, hey, man, I'm looking for a fence. Hey, you know what? I was just bumped into the gas station and today, and there was just these kind young guys, and they were laughing. They were having a good time. And they were very respectful, held the door open for me and everything. And, you know, so I think it just, like you said, humanity, it needs that. It needs that positive energy. It needs people taking care of people and getting back to that. And, you know, especially if we're in a position to be blessed with extra income and profits and stuff like that, there's no need that we need to charge for everything and just really take advantage of people. It's, you know, there's so many ways we can help. And,
absolutely.
You know, me and Marty, we bless people all the time. Like, and, you know, we don't go down and post about it or anything like that. Not showing shade that people do, but, it's just, hey, you know, we're doing this out of good of our heart. We want to help people. We want to see people win. We, you know, so the most we ask for is a review, you know, so, you know, we'll take, you know, and when we first got started, you know, it was a little difficult because we were low on profits, but we just remain the mindset. It's the growth mindset. It's the thinking long term instead of right now. Like, yeah, we could charge this lady, you know, $150 to adjust her gate or do this because we didn't do the install. But maybe she doesn't have it. Maybe she's on a fixed income, and that $700-$800 that she's getting on Social Security, $150. So now she's just in her head. She's like, well, I'm just going to have to settle. Now you got this poor old lady fighting a gate out there. We live in Illinois, so the conditions change every couple of minutes. And, you know, so it's just like, man, you got to take care of people. And, you know, I was always taught, man, you treat people like it was your mother, your grandmother out there. And if you're, you know, treat them like if their contractor was there, how would you want your grandmother, or your mother to be handled?
Absolutely.
You know, would you be, you know, how would you feel if somebody was being predatory or trying to really upsell and do a bunch of change orders on the back end and really just, you know, that's not what we're about. So, you know, we charge accordingly to make sure that we can do a great job and keep all the promises that we made and even over deliver. There's so many decks we do, whether we will add custom railing, we'll add extra deck lighting just based off hey, maybe an elderly client, let's illuminate the steps so they don't miss any, you know, as they're coming in. Let's double up on those. Let's put some extra solar lights in, you know, some of the panels or some of the railings just so that they can navigate the deck and stuff safely. So upgrading all their latches, you know, especially if they have kids. So we want the nice, cool, tall pool safety latches and really discovering who our true client is, not being an order taker, but going out there and saying, hey, how can I help you? You know, and then getting their story, getting a little bit about, hey, how are you going to use the fence or the deck? And, you know, how many people are going to be on it. Like, I'm asking a whole bunch of probing questions so that I can build this exactly how you want. I'm not here to, hey, you need a fence. All right, cool. I understand it. But what is it for? Is it for containment? Is it for privacy? Is it for both? You know, you got a crazy neighbor. Do you got people, you know, like animals digging under, you know, your structure right now? You got the neighbor's dog pooping in your yard. Like, what's the problem here? Let's uncover right. that.
Absolutely.
Because I want to solve your problem. And sometimes just saying, all right, hey, the cheapest fence, it may not be the answer to your problem. You know, you may have a problem with your dogs barking every time they see somebody. So if I just sell you the cheapest fence, and that's what I think another problem is a lot of people, they get trapped in that. They just want the job so bad that they don't solve the problem, right? So it's just like, oh, you can't afford this? Well, hey, do this. Well, hey, I will tell them, this is not the best right for you. Now, I think it's as our job as a professional is to guide them to the right decision, not let them dictate it. You know, like, we need to be the professional and give a professional recommendation. This is what I would do. And then if we can't do it in a way that is serving the client, we pass on the job. Just like with wooden fences. We began starting to do the wood fences, just notoriously, we just kept seeing how, you know, how often they would twist and rot and right, stuff like that. Right. We tried staining, it wasn't for us. But we're like, you know what, how do we rectify this situation? Because that was the only kind of fence that we couldn't warranty. So then we started doing Postmasters, you know, and now if you want a wooden fence, you cannot have MAP quality install you wood posts, no matter how much you pay us. We're not doing it. Yeah. Because number one, we know it's going to fail. So we're putting in something that you're going to have a problem. You're going to have to pay for this again. And also, there's going to be some maintenance that you're not anticipating. So even if you say, oh yeah, we're going to stain it, 9 times out of 10, they're going to stain it the first time, see how crappy that process is. And then when you say, yeah, you got to do that every 1 to 2 years, they're going to go, oh my God. And now they have an ongoing expense coming. Then they got stuff going wrong. It's just like, you know what? You got to be the professional. You got to guide them to the correct solution to their problem. And if you're not really doing that discovery and that uncovering of that and asking the right questions, then it's going to be really hard to help them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I said earlier, I don't believe I'm the answer to everybody, you right. know, is because I don't want to give them something that they don't want. You know, I see that all the time in our private fence groups on Facebook is, hey, a customer wants this, but where can I find something similar that's a lot cheaper?
Right.
I see that all the time. And it's like, okay, to a point, but are you going to be happy with installing it? Is your customer going to be happy? Why is it cheaper? Why is the price point lower? You've
right.
got to be comfortable with what you're installing and why you're doing it. And you sell them, this is our comfort zone. We can stand behind it and stick with it. And, you know, I get it. I mean, you do have to do some due diligence and make sure at the same time you're not overpaying.
Right.
But there's got to be a line where you're not sacrificing quality, you know, to squeeze another $5 out of it. But
and that's why I think having financing is so important.
Right.
Because if you can't afford the right solution, let us help you afford it.
Right.
But the only thing more expensive than this fence is another one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, I always tell people, like, when I'm on site with them, there's a difference between price and cost.
Yes.
Like, price is what you're paying today. Cost is what you're going to pay over time for either hiring the right or wrong contractor and using the right or wrong materials.
Absolutely.
So it may be cheaper today, but in 5 years when you're repairing it, replacing it, there's been so many countless times I go out there and a person just had a wooden fence installed 8 years ago and now they're getting another one. If you would have just got vinyl 8 years ago, this thing would still be standing. You'd have no maintenance and you'd not have to repair it. So now that $10,000 fence is now $16,000. No, you paid $26,000 for one fence.
Right.
Instead of just buying it right the first time. So
absolutely.
Help guiding them that and showing the valuation, you know, hey, it's not that much more. And especially when we use Postmasters, our difference in price per section that we charge is only $45. And that's
right.
what I educate the client. On national average, it's $75 an 8-foot section to stain. So if you're hiring this out, it's going to cost you $75.
Yep.
We're going to upgrade you to something that doesn't need any maintenance. For 45, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that 75 is in a recurrence, like every couple of years.
Right.
This 45 is a one time. So
right.
Really just educating the client and really guiding them towards that decision. And literally, you know, I get a vinyl sale all the time and I feel really good about it because not because of the profit margins or any different or anything like that. It's because I know that this person's taken care of. The manufacturer is offering a warranty on it. We're offering a warranty. The transfer of liability then comes over to us.
Right.
Like, and that's what you're paying for. If you're hiring the cheap guy, he may be the best contractor and have the best heart in the world. But if he doesn't charge him enough, he cannot come out there and satisfy that. Right. Right? So if something goes wrong, he hasn't built it in the price because he gave you rock bottom price to lock it in. So that's the way that I look at it. I have to charge more because I'm going to come out.
Yep.
Anything goes wrong, you're not paying. I'm not charging you to come out. Absolutely. So I have to build that into my price so that I can keep that. You know, in right. just the same business model and approach I take to real estate, right? Why do I have to raise the rent every single year, right? Do I feel bad about it? Yeah, right? But I make that upfront expectation. Hey, there's a yearly rent review that happens every year. I'm going to take care of every single thing in the property anytime you have a problem, but I have to raise the rent, you know, because I feel there's a lot of slumlords out there. You know, there's some that are, you know, just not very business savvy or, you know, right. really aren't leading from the heart. But I think a lot of, rental property owners, they accidentally become slumlords. And it's because they're not growing with they're not matching the rate of inflation. So prices are going up, insurance is going up, maintenance and repairs and all that is going up, and the rent is still the same. So they're staying in their comfort zone because, oh, I've had a 3-year tenant, he pays the rent all the time, and now you're sucked into that. But like, dude, you have to grow with the economy or you're going to lose. And now he can't afford to come change out that AC.
Exactly. Because
that little reserve fund that he was saving before when the rent was at its right price is now dried up because it's getting ate up by these other expenses. So that's always how I'm looking at it. Hey, yes, I care about taking care of you today, but I want you to be taken care of in 10, 15, 20 right. years. And I think that's really about making a legacy and really cementing your place in this industry. That's going to be one huge thing that really separates you from the competitors, because at the end of the day, our fence sign is on that thing. So nobody's going to drive around and say, oh, they probably went the cheap route. Right. They're going to look at that sign and say, well, I'm not hiring that guy. That fence looks like crap, you know? So,
absolutely.
You can't afford to do it right the first time.
Well, then you're in a place where you're making a decision you never wanted to make. Can't afford this guy's furnace. I can't afford to come out and fix his deck. And you start looking for excuses you never wanted to find. You might not have ever intended to be that way, but how do I afford this? Because you did a disservice, honestly, by not being able to afford it.
And the client is expecting it to be done by a professional, so they just don't know what they don't know. And then you turn it around and make it their fault. Like, hey, well, you wanted the cheapest price. Well, you didn't guide us and let us know, hey, all the ramifications and the additional cost that come with picking the cheaper option. Like, so you need to educate the client, you know, because that I think that I've seen that so many times, especially with the cheaper guys. They'll start blaming the client. Like, dude, it's not there. They thought they hired a professional. Yeah. They thought they were in good hands. Stop being an order taker and start really solving problems, right? Because that's ultimately what we do as business owners. We're just problem solvers. The bigger problem you solve, the more you make.
Absolutely. Oh, I want to respect your time. We're going on a little over an hour, but I wanted to kind of finish up with a question. And I'm pretty sure I know your answer is when we talk about mentors. Do you have a mentor? I guess let's start out with.
Yeah, I have multiple mentors actually.
Yeah,
and I fully believe in them, man. And I can't stress how valuable they are.
Absolutely. Is it a mentor you found just organically and somebody in life, or have you actually gone out and like paid somebody to be a mentor?
Yeah, all my mentorships are paid. I've got probably over all total, probably over 30 grand in mentorships that I've paid for.
Yeah.
I paid for a $10,000 real estate one, a couple mindset mentorships, accountability partners, a whole bunch of different things. It's just anything that I want to know, I find a person that's where I want to be, and I just pay them for their time, right? It's like the opportunity cost. Yeah, I can sit around and learn it on YouTube University for the next 3 years, but if there's a problem, who am I going to run to?
Right.
You know, I'd rather shorten the learning curve and then leverage their experience, because, you know, the old saying is, you know, you learn best by doing, or experience, right? Experience is the best teacher. But nobody said it had to be your experience.
No.
So if I could pay somebody to leverage their 10 years that they've already been in this, they could tell me all the pitfalls. Hey, what to look out for. Hey, these are a little couple of tips and tricks to help more profitable or deliver a better experience. That is money very well spent, you know, and an investment in yourself pays the best interest. So,
right. Well, exactly. And that goes back to action, right? So, I was in Dallas a few weeks ago at an outdoor workshop put on by Robert Whitaker. You've probably seen him online. He owns a Purple Coaching Consulting business as well. And he actually had a speaker there who is an author and wrote The Speed of Trust. and he talked about, so the author was there speaking to us, and he paid this guy a pretty penny to come speak to us for half a day, right?
Right.
But the insight that I took in those 4 hours that he was there was invaluable. And right. And so, like you said, if you can cut down that learning curve, and he actually gave us an instance where, when Doritos and Taco Bell joined and did the whole Dorito Loco Taco thing, right?
Right.
So the two CEOs got together and had this idea, and they just went out and just did it. And before the contracts were written, before the lawyers got involved, and because they got to it, they trusted each other, and they bet off of each other. Their income in that first year that they just jumped in and did it was, of course, untold millions.
Right.
You know, and the lawyer's like, you got to get, okay, we'll take care of the contract now that we're settled. Right.
Right.
And they did. And they did that. But that's kind of what you're getting at, is these people knew what they were doing, and they got to it, and they cut off the learning curve, or they cut off all this fluff by communicating and talking to somebody smarter than them. Hey, you've got the distribution for tacos. I've got the chip that everybody loves. How can we make this work? Right.
Right.
So it was a unique example. But it showed what happens when you have people that you can bounce ideas off and that you can trust. And, and he used another example on this, and I'll finish up with this. He goes back to similar to what we talked about with our teams, you know, our crews, and building them up. And when there is a mistake, do we yell at them or kick them to the curb, or do we use it as an opportunity? So this author's, one of his four boys is actually the kick returner for the Eagles.
Oh, wow.
Philadelphia Eagles. And so I guess he, in one game, lost a fumble or whatever. It was a big, huge mistake, right?
Right.
And when you're only a special teams, he's 5'10", 5'11", you know, 190 pounds, dripping wet, maybe.
Right.
And you're special teams, you're not on these guaranteed contracts like the rest of these players. You're on practice teams and 90-day contracts and whatever it is.
Right.
And he made a big mistake, and he said he called his dad and was like, I'm done with the Eagles. It's over. But the coach came to him and said, look, I know you're better than this. I know you're better than this. Just let's go back. And the very next game, I think he had like a 90-yard touchdown return.
Oh, right?
And so he goes, yeah, of course, I'm the dad. I'm going to tell the story. It's a proud dad moment. But he goes, but it's a perfect example of taking an opportunity to build somebody up.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously if there becomes a repetition, you got to address it differently. And not this season, but last season, he was the top kick returner in the league. And this year he's been injured a lot, but you know, he used it obviously as a proud dad moment, but he did use it as a moment of a mindset and take an opportunity to build up your team and build trust. Right. And when he built that trust with that player, it was an immediate result. The very next week, he had the touchdown return.
Right.
Right. So when you trust who you're around, when you trust the people you're with, things get done, and they get done right.
Yep.
You know, and that's a mindset, because I have a hard time. Like, I know how to do every job in this shop, and so I want to like do it my way or manage it. I have to let them do it so I can get other stuff done. And we get so much more done when we trust each other.
My mindset mentor told me a valuable thing. He said, for the CEO to be born, the hustler must die.
Right. Yeah.
So you can't be hustling and doing every single task and everything. You got to delegate. You got to hire people that are better and smarter than you to really become that business owner that you really want to be and create that freedom. So
absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. I love that kind of stuff. So, hey, I want to thank you again for joining me today. Giving us a little insight of what you do, different ideas, and I appreciate the friendship and what we do together. So I appreciate your time today for sure, the most of anything. Because as you said, you know, family is first. But it's evening time where you're at, and you took a little time out for me, so I appreciate it. And look forward to seeing you, I think, in a few weeks in Salt Lake, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
I'll be at
Fence Tech. And thanks. We'll and also thanks for your time, man. I know this is your show, but you know, you took the time on this Friday night, man, to meet with me and have these provoking conversations to hopefully give your listeners some value. And I hope I was able to help. And if anybody needs anything, feel free to reach out.
Yeah. No, for sure. All in the show notes and stuff, I'll you know, I'll have you in there and so people can find you and that kind of thing. So I appreciate it once again, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon.
Yes, sir. Have a great night.
You too.